go to demos now. We're going to spend the rest of the time focused entirely on building solutions. So I'm going to go ahead and launch a beta build. This is the beta 2 build of Visual Studio 2005. And we're going to start basically from scratch and build a new project. So actually, show that again. So we're going to do a file open website. One of the things that we've done in Visual Studio 2005 is, you know, I mentioned we want to make it more optimized for web development and for web developers' workflow. And really tailor it so that the tool works for you as opposed to sometimes against you. You know, one way to do that is to make it much more flexible in terms of what types of web projects you can open and what are the requirements that you need in order to actually build a website. So today you need to have IIS installed, you need to have front page server extensions installed, you need to have a project file. And, you know, opening and working on a web sometimes is a fairly complicated process. What I'm going to do here is open a web, and one of the things you'll see is the dialog looks quite different. That's because there's lots more flexibility, a lot more options you can use. You can, for example, now, you know, browse through IIS websites on a box to see exactly what's open, and you can create new websites just like you can today. You can use FTP, so you can go ahead and just use FTP to access a remote site, so it's ideal for a hosting-based solution. You can still use front page server extensions if you want to use that as a web editing solution. But you can also then just use what's called the file system. And so you can open up any directory folder and basically use that as your web project and you're good to go. And so what I'm going to go ahead and do is just show that off. I'm going to create a new folder. What do you want me to call it? Bob. Oh, it's Phoenix Bob. We'll use Fred later. We'll create the Phoenix Bob directory. It's always interesting to hear what people yell out. I did this once in New Orleans, and it was all liquor related. And so, like, we're building the business class. What do you want to call it? Tequila. Okay. I don't know. We built this Phoenix Bob directory. You can see in the file system, C:PhoenixBob is what it looks like. And now we have it open up in Visual Studio. So a couple of things to call out. What is in this directory now by default in Visual Studio 2005? Nothing. We don't generate a default webform1.aspx file. I've never found an app that actually has deployed a webform1.aspx as their home page. So why put an awkwardly named file in your project? We're not inserting regex file unless you are localizing your site. We're not generating a project file and a solution file unless you need one. We're not sticking a random web.config file. We're not going ahead and adding a random CSS file. Instead, what we're trying to do is only do what you want us to do when you want us to do it. And stay out of your hair, stay out of your way. Still provide kind of guidance as to how to build your app. But make the system, not kind of force you into a specific model in terms of doing it, and making it much more flexible and adaptable to what you need. The other nice thing about this model is if you copy anything into this directory, it now shows up in your solution. So it no longer requires that you do kind of add existing items if it's already there. Instead, what we're showing inside the tool is actually the physical directory structure that you actually have. So it makes it much easier as you're working with lots of content to copy things in them. So let's go ahead and build something in here. So I'm going to add a new item. As you can see, there's a lot more item templates that you can use, a lot of new features. We're going to use a lot of these over the next hour or so. I'm going to go ahead and build a simple page. So I'm just going to call this simple page, .aspx. One thing that's kind of new in Visual Studio 2005 is for websites, we no longer have a notion of a VB or C# project. Instead, we let you use whatever language you want. In fact, you can use multiple languages in a single web project. So you have some pages in VB, some pages in C#. You have VB pages calling C# classes and vice versa. And yes, IntelliSense still works, which is kind of fun. So quick poll, VB or C#?
C#.
VB. Okay. So we're going to nice thing is a drop down. Multi-language, so what we'll do is we'll flip back and forth. So C# guys won this time. You guys are going to be more vocal. I know you're out there. Next time we do this, call out and we'll do it in VB. And the nice thing is, again, we can choose whatever we want. We're no longer forced to upfront make a language choice and be tied throughout the system. We also then have support for both code behind. So here I'm just going to keep the code behind checked. It's the default out of the box. As well as we have support now for single file. So if you want to do single file pages where you have a script or an equal server block, and that's where you actually put all your event code, you can now do that as well. You get full IntelliSense and debugging support for both. A couple things to note while we're on the topic of IntelliSense. Did anyone see the font in the back? Is it big enough? Okay. Did everyone hear me in the back? Yeah. Okay, good. I once had a very polite audience, and people came up after and said, "You were great, but we couldn't hear you." exactly what you hear after you talk for 2 hours. IntelliSense. One of the things we've done is added IntelliSense everywhere. So, for example, you can now go ahead and get full IntelliSense for all ASP.NET page directives. Something you don't have today. You can go ahead and have IntelliSense for code nuggets. So if we said, for example, like int x dot, you get IntelliSense there. Same for data binding expressions. You now get IntelliSense for things like CSS. So if we say style equals background color Azure, you now get full IntelliSense there. So basically any place that you type, you get IntelliSense. Hopefully makes life a lot easier. You notice also the markup for this page. A couple things are missing. Remember all those meta tags that said built with Visual Studio? Didn't also find any customers that really liked that. not many of them complained, but you always ask, what's wrong with this template? And they're like, well, I end up changing it completely every time I build a new page. Well, that's maybe a problem. We also now no longer do absolute positioning by default. Instead, we flow layout. We still support absolute positioning, so if you do want kind of grid layout by default for your web content, you can. But what we typically see is most web pages flow, and so that's now our default. Other thing you'll notice is that we're now XHTML compliant by default out of the box. This is true for all output that's rendered from ASP.NET controls. It's also been true for all pages that we build with Visual Studio. And the main reason we're shooting for that is we think it provides kind of the best way going forward to target all browsers in a nice, consistent, clean way. And so by generating XHTML markup compliance, or being markup compliant, makes it much easier for you to build a solution that works great in IE, works great in Firefox, works great in Safari, and any other standard in Opera, any other standards browser out there. And so you'll see the default doc type that we'll put in will be XHTML compliant. In beta 2, we actually made an XHTML 1.1. We're actually changing it slightly to be 1.0 transitional with a final release. Just we got enough kind of people saying, hey, I love being standards compliant, but not that much. So you'll have an option. You can still do 1.1, but we're going to make the default a little bit less stringent. The other thing that's cool about our compliance is that we now have IntelliSense support so that you can go ahead and automatically vary the IntelliSense validation that you get based on what standard or markup or browser you want to target. So for example, if I had IE6 selected, and I go to the body tag here, you'll see IE6 has a whole bunch of properties and events that are supported. And in fact, if I actually went to, let's say, the script tag and did a client-side script block here, said, hey, function foo, instead of document dot, you'll see we get, obviously, IntelliSense for client-side the client-side object model, hey, there's the same large set of properties and events that are available there. Downside is not all these properties and events are going to work on all browsers. And so how do you know as a developer, am I building something that's going to work great in Firefox as well? Well, the nice thing is you can just pick a standard, whether it's HTML 401, or let's just go ahead and say XHTML transitional. And what we'll then go ahead and do is vary what's available in your client-side script, so that instead of seeing all those things, instead you're only seeing the subset that's supported by that standard or by that specific device. Likewise, when you go ahead and do IntelliSense on an HTML element, you'll see only those properties that are consistent across that standard. And so it makes it much easier for you to go ahead, and you'll get red squigglies anywhere that you're not doing it, or show up in your error list. So it makes it much easier for you to go ahead and pick what is the client type that I'm trying to target, and how do I know as a developer, without having to test every possible combination at runtime, that I'm building things that are going to be compliant and work and everything. So, other kind of cool things to just kind of show off. One of the things that kind of always bugged me about Visual Studio IDE when you're in source mode is there's a lot of real estate being used by a whole bunch of things that don't work that well in source view or don't work at all in source view. So for example, the toolbox in source view, kind of grayed out. The property grid doesn't do much. It'd be great if it actually did do something. So for example, let's say I want to go ahead and just add a table. I can now drag and drop not just in source mode, but also in design mode. Some text. Let's get into that. Let's say I want to go ahead and add a button. Well, I could obviously type ASP button, or we'll just drag and drop it. And so, you know, as you can see, nice stuff there. And obviously, we don't just want to have the toolbox. It'd be great if the property grid works as well. So you can see as I'm hovering over something, hey, button one is selected. If I, you know, click on the TD, it's going to go ahead and show me the TD properties. Let's just go back to the button. Let's say I want to change a property like the text to be push me. You see, automatically updated the source. Notice it didn't reformat it. but basically, you know, the tool's, again, working for you instead of against you. Other things to notice. As I'm moving around the source, you'll notice that we're actually bolding different things. I'm using a font that's not positional, so that's why it's sort of pushing things a little bit out, and it's also blown up to be larger than what you'd usually have when you're doing development. But one of the things you'll notice is it makes it easy for you to be able to identify kind of start and end tags. So you see the div down there is bolded. So it visually just makes it easier for you as you're dealing with large nested content to kind of identify starts and ends. Other things that are kind of cool in order to do that are you'll notice down here this thing we call a tag navigate. This is also dynamically updating as I'm moving around. And what it's showing you is the current tag you're on, as well as every parent tag leading up to the top level HTML element. So I click on the button, you'll see, oh, I'm within a TD and a TR and a table inside a div, inside a form, inside a body, inside HTML. So again, it makes it much easier for you to identify. If you have an ID set on anything, it'll also show up here. So it also makes it much easier for you to identify what am I contained within. And if you want to see, oh, but how do I just see everything on TV? Just click, and it'll actually highlight that region. Just want to see what's inside the TV? Oh, just select the inner contents. It makes it much easier for you to go ahead and identify nesting relationships and et cetera. This works both in source view, it also works in design view. And in design view, it's super helpful. So if you're in a layer or you're inside a table, figuring out how do I set the property on the container, and how do I jump to a layer? How do I jump to a TR? There's no easy way gesture today. Now I just go to the tag navigator, and it's pretty easy to find. Other kind of cool things, and notice over here we have this little expansion collapse button. This can be set on any HTML element, and lets me easily collapse and view kind of what my page looks like, and then expand it. And it's not doing anything in the source. It's basically just providing an editor feature so you can go ahead and expand and collapse things. Yeah, it makes it much easier for you to sort of see different content, collapse things so you can focus on just the thing you care about, and then kind of expand everything up for you. Then the fun feature that everyone cares about, HTML source preservation. Let's show this one off. So what I'm going to go ahead and do is I've chosen I want my TDs to be lined up just under my TRs, and I want to have this button use this indention style or set of everything on one line. We're going to go ahead and have everything lined up from an attribute perspective. And I could do other random formats that I want to, but just want to give you an example. This is a non-standard kind of HTML formatting rule that I'm applying. So, of course, if I went into the design mode, see it in the design mode, go back to source mode. Today, well, Might not be exactly the same one. But it guarantees if we actually said, you know, if we change this to be some new text and went back, definitely wouldn't be the same. But you'll notice now it is. Didn't modify the TR-TD relationship, the button stays the same. Go back to the button here. Let's actually say Phoenix me. There you go. Push Bob, yeah. Push Fred. You'll see also again, we changed the text attribute on the button, kept the exact same formatting for the button. So even when you change a specific element, we'll actually go out of our way to make sure we don't modify it. So it makes it, again, much easier. You can trust the designer. You can flip back and forth. It's not generating a whole bunch of garbage for you, and it's going to make sure it maintains your position. Other nice thing to kind of call out is, notice when I have my cursor set on the button here, and I flip to design mode, notice what's selected, the button. Let's say I select the E in new in design mode, flip to source mode, notice where the cursor is. Basically, in case you missed it, it's on the E, it's still. But basically, both selection as well as cursor location now is mimic both the source view and design view. So you can flip back and forth quickly and not have to kind of find your way in the dock again. It'll be exactly where you left it in the other view. So we talked a little bit about formatting here. So we never change your formatting for you. Key thing, never change your formatting. But you know, one thing always when you talk about formatting that's challenging is when you ask someone, well, how do you want it to be formatted? And the answer inevitably comes back, well, the right way. Well, what is the right way? Well, it's, you know, I want my things inverted and I want the color scheme to look like this. Every developer has a particular style preference that they care about in terms of how they want HTML to look like. The same is also true for code. People often ask me what was the hardest thing getting with ASP.NET 1.0 in the entire project? And I think it was deciding what brace style our developers use. It was probably the most contentious and difficult phase of the entire project. Everything else was easy. But you know, should braces be on the same lines of construct or indented underneath? We spent weeks on it. So the nice thing about ES 2005 is whenever we generate markup in the designer, and whenever we import markup from different places, we don't force you to use our default template or our default format when we generate things. Instead, we let you control as a developer what you think is the right way to do it. So for example, I can go into the formatting and validating options, and I can choose to define what the default capitalization should look like. I can choose to define whether or not attributes should be quoted or not. I can choose to define when tag wrapping should happen. I can also then on a per tag basis control precisely what the indention and line break semantics should be. So for example, I can say, oh, I want to have a separate closing tag for this thing. I want to have the line breaks both before and after, or just before, or just after, or both, or neither. You know, you can basically control however you want it to. You can control what the indenting semantics are. Should we indent it or not, and if so, by how much? You can also, if you want to get fancy, you can actually control the color scheme for each of the tag elements. So if you want to have your TDs look different from your TRs in terms of color, go for it. And what that also means is anytime you get markup from someone, or anytime you want to change your styles, instead of having to start over from scratch, you can just go ahead, right-click, and say format selection to apply the default rule that you've set. And it'll go ahead and clean it up. So if Bob generates random HTML that looks terrible, just open it up in the site, highlight, right-click, format, now it looks good. All the settings inside Visual Studio 2005, including this, are stored in XML file now, and you can copy that XML file from machine to machine. So when Bob goes to lunch, you can sneak in the machine. Cool, so a couple other things just to show while we're here. And those are the designers. So everything I've done so far is source view. Designer, we have lots of new benefits. You can now resize tables automatically and see information. A couple people always ask, are you generating CSS instead of width? Yep, we are. Kind of other things in terms of support. We have layer support. So if you want to do layers, either fixed or flow-based, using div tags for more CSS compliance, we now have rich designer support for that as well. As you're building things, you know, again, we're generating standards compliant markup. There's different types of standards, obviously. There's standards where you want to target browsers, so like XHTML or Firefox or IE. There's also then compliance standards in terms of accessibility. So someone who is seeing impaired needs to use a screen reader or a braille reader in order to view a website. Or someone else who has other disabilities using your site. There's a whole set of standards out there for enabling that provide both best practices as well as rules for how you go ahead and build your site to make sure it's available to everyone. It's both a good thing to do in terms of broadening your audience and make sure that everyone can see it. It's also increasingly a regulation if you're doing any government work or for a large corporation. They'll often say, oh, you know, you get paid when it passes an accessibility check, or we reserve the right to take back some money if it doesn't pass an accessibility check. The challenge from a developer perspective is if you look at the different standards, for example, in the U.S., Section 508 is the American Disabilities Act regulations that were passed by Congress. There's also then the WCAG accessibility for Europe. That's a regulation in much of Europe. The pretty big standards, you know, only about 1,800 pages long. And knowing whether your site is accessible or compliant or not is hard. You know, typically what people do today is they'll actually take their HTML and copy and paste it into like an online web solution that'll tell them whether or not it's accessible. And the hard challenge with that is you basically have to try every possible combination of your site, generate every possible markup view, and then send it over to the online accessibility checker to see whether or not it's right or not. And it's not really conducive in terms of a workflow. So what we've done in Visual Studio 2005 is actually built in an accessibility checker in the box. And so the way this works is, let's say I add some markup and add the image tag. And I'm going to point at a fictitious image that doesn't exist right now. So I'm going to get a little error that I'm, I'm getting an error here. I'm getting an error which is food.jpg doesn't exist. But this is technically, this HTML will work in a browser. It's going to show up an image. And so, I can build a solution, deploy it, and think that my site was all working if I'm hitting it with IE or Firefox, and I'm, you know, I can see. The challenge is if I am blind, I have no way of knowing, or seeing impaired, I have no way of knowing what is this image really. Is it a logo? Is it a navigation thing? Is it a diagram, a picture of someone? You know, what is it? And this will fail any accessibility compliance check, which means that your site is not accessible. So how to know that? Well, today, there's no easy way to know it. 2005, I can click this little button, and I can do an accessibility validation check. And I can do it for either 508 or the W3C accessibility guideline. Run it on my site, and one of the things you'll see that's shown up here is I'm getting a warning. Basically, it says the image is missing a text equivalent to either an alt or a long description attribute. So if I say alt equals company logo, now a screen reader knows how to provide information to a user about what this is. And you'll see when I run the accessibility check, I'm now clean. And so I can run the accessibility check either manually on any individual page. I can run it across the site. I can also integrate this as part of my build system. So every time I hit F5 or Control F5, I do a forced validation as part of the compilation process. And you know, the end result is you have a site that's much more available to everyone, and that makes it much easier to generate accessible compliance, or be accessible compliant. So we've done lots of kind of web-specific features. Let's talk a little about coding now. So what I want to go ahead and do is I want to just double-click and add an event handler. So specifically, I'm just going to add a button click on top of that button we added in the page. A couple of things to call out here. Here's my code behind that I went through as I'm using code behind. You'll notice that there isn't a giant block called initialize method with a comment that says, don't touch this, I'm paying debt. What we found is, hey, a lot of people did touch it. It also meant that sometimes the tool would clobber your code, and likewise, sometimes you'd clobber the tool. And so we've gone to a new model of Visual Studio 2005 called partial types, where we can actually much more cleanly separate out what's the code that the tool's generating and what's the code that you're working on. And so what you're going to see in your code behind is the view of the code that you actually worked on. The other big benefit about this is we no longer statically declare the field references to all the controls and the code behind that are in the ASPIs. Instead, we can actually generate it as part of the second partial class. Big benefit there is you might have run into this in the past where you go ahead and rename a control in the ASPX, or you delete a control in the ASPX, you go to the code behind, you hit compile, it compiles, you run it, you get a null reference exception. And the reason there is because the tool is generating and trying to keep in sync the control definitions in your base class and map them to the ASPX. And if you don't load the designer, the tool doesn't update the reference. And what's worse is you don't get a compile time error. Now, because of kind of some changes we made in Visual Studio 2005, anytime you modify the ASPX, you always get up-to-date IntelliSense in your code behind. And if you delete or rename a control that's going to cause a runtime error later, you'll actually now get a compile time error in your source, which is kind of where you want it, so you can easily fix it. So what I'm going to go ahead and do here is just modify this button. So we'll just say button text is it Fred push me? There we go. We'll go ahead and hit one. A couple things you'll notice here. Did anything pop up? The ASP.NET Development Server. It's a built-in web server that we're now shipping as part of Visual Studio 2005. So it doesn't require you have IIS on the box. So this will work both in XP Home as well as XP Pro as well as any other solution. It also will work on a machine that does have IIS on the box, so they're not exclusive. What this web server does, it only listens on local requests. So Fred, or the Bob, the character that was screwing up the HTML, you can't play with your machine while you're doing development, which is always fun today. It also means that you don't have to worry about more malicious people playing with your machine either remotely. The web server will also shut down anytime you shut down Visual Studio. So you also don't have to worry about, hey, there's this web server running in the background. The biggest benefit of it is it doesn't require you to be an administrator in order to debug it. So you can actually be logged on to your system as a normal user and do full debugging and development. So especially if you're in a university or school environment or any kind of clustered environment where you have a public cluster of machines, you really want this feature. So anyway, push me, hey, Fred push me, the site works. Not super rich app, but gives you an example. One of the things I want to show, though, is let's make some changes. Push me in Phoenix. Hit save. Usually I'd end up rebuilding rebuilding my app and then running it again to see it take effect. That's with Visual Studio 2003. Visual Studio 2005, we've gone to a much more dynamic project model, which means that you no longer have to recompile in order to see things take effect. Instead, I can just hit save, go back to my here, push this button, and hey, now you push me in Phoenix. Yeah, so it doesn't force you to compile. So for a simple page, it might not be gaining you much, but if you have, say, thousands of pages on a site, that's a big time saver. Instead of spending 30 seconds compiling, you can make a single surgical change, hit save, hit refresh in the browser. Now obviously you can also still, if you want to, build either the page, which will only compile the individual page. You can also then build the website so you can see all the errors. And if you do a control F5 or an F5, that will also do a full compile so that you get the IntelliSense errors in your project as opposed to at runtime. But it does mean that for like small surgical changes where you kind of know, yeah, it's working, I don't need to do a full compile. It makes it much faster and kind of, again, much more suited to a web workload. Other cool thing, set a breakpoint in this line, hit F5. You notice, hey, it's the first time I'm trying to enable debugging for this solution. And it's saying, hey, you don't have a web.config file in your project. Because right now, the Phoenix Cloud project just has these two files that we have, ASPX and Gumbahan. And you'll notice we're specifically asking you, hey, can we make this modification? Here's what we're thinking of doing. You can either say yes or no. So again, it's trying to be much more transparent in terms of what the tool's doing and have you, the developer, have much more control over what's actually going on. So we've attached the debugger. Go ahead, Phoenix me. And break in the debugger here. One nice thing you'll notice, actually, as you hover over variables now in the text source view, is that you can now drill into their properties. You can even sort of hit viewers where you can visualize them as XML, HTML, lots of cool things there. Hit F5, we'll continue. Fred pushed me to Phoenix. Now, it's actually really Bob who pushed me. So what I'd like to be able to do is, with the debugger still attached, change the source, hit save, okay, the debugger's still attached, no recompilation. Whoop. Never hit Bob, hit F5, Bob push. But again, you don't need to actually detach the debugger and recompile the project in order to make changes while in debug mode. That's true for both VB and C#. We'll actually let you make edits anywhere. So there's a feature in VB6 called Edit and Continue that is being back in VB.NET in Visual Studio 2005. For client projects, it lets you make changes inside like the breakpoint area that you're currently in. You can't add new methods or change class names and things like that. The nice thing for the web is we've actually gone a little bit further. You can actually do all of those things. You can basically do any change you want while in debug mode. You can't make it while you're actually broken in a specific breakpoint. But between requests, you can make any change you want. Again, not have to attach and reattach the debugger. Last two things to show here. Since we can actually make changes, we can actually screw things up as well. We're going to write some code that is just going to go ahead and null out this control before we try to access the text property. This will cause a problem. And I've got a null reference exception. One thing to note is as you're doing it, a little bit more helper UI in terms of what specifically is the null reference exception that you're running into. So it'll pinpoint exactly what line it is and provide information in terms of why it's happening. So we actually link automatically into the docs for exception type information. We can also drill into details so that you can actually see the inner exception and all the other information around it. So it makes debugging hopefully a lot easier. Other thing to show while we're talking a little bit about code here, just talk about a code-specific feature. Something we call refactoring. So say, for example, rather than hard code in this string, what I really want to do is have a string variable I'm going to call message, set it here. And let's say, well, gosh, rather than, I might want to be setting messages on the button. Pretend this is a more complicated scenario, but I might want to be able to send a message on the button all over the place in my code rather than have duplicate this code. What I want to be able to do is kind of refactor it so that I actually have a nice clean helper method that I can use in multiple different places. And so I can restructure my code and make it more manageable and more maintainable. Challenge is that today I have to end up having to make a lot of surgical code changes everywhere. With refactoring support in Visual Studio 2005, I can have just highlight on the line of code. And say, hey, I want to extract a method to encapsulate this block of code. Not just a single line, I can do for a complete block. And what I want to do is I want to call this setMessage method. I'm going to take a string as an argument. And the tool will go ahead and refactor my code. It's going to encapsulate the code that was highlighted, pull out all variables, encapsulate within a function that passes in those variables, and update my code references to it. This will work both within a single file. It will also work across multiple files on the site. So if you rename a utility class that's being used by five pages, hey, five pages get updated. Likewise, if you rename a method, you extract a field, change it to a property, all those types of patterns can automatically update the code.
Is it available in VB?
Good question. The question is, is it available in VB? The answer is yes and no. It's not built in to Visual Studio 2005. But we just announced a deal where you can actually download it. And so it'll be available at RTM to download. And actually, the VB one has a few cool features, the C# one doesn't. So, much to the annoyance of the C# team. We've been lording over refactoring over the VB team for the last year. So you won't be able to use it, do the same patterns in VB. Last but not least, I'm just going to go ahead and add an error page to my site. And I'm going to have a method I'm going to call do something dumb. And worse, this method do something dumb doesn't exist. So, hey, I'm going to get a compilation error when I try to run this site. Now, today, when you go ahead and run a project in VS, it by default always looks for webform1.aspx out of the box. And then you can right-click on any file to make it your default launch page. We still do support the ability to set a default launch page, but our default behavior is actually to launch the current page that you're editing. So if you have, for example, simple page in the selected there and you hit run, it'll go ahead and launch simple page. If you're working on error page, it'll launch error page. Again, you can still hard code it to always go to a single URL, but we think it makes it a lot easier as you're working with a page. You don't always have to start off and drill in. The other cool feature then we've added is, let's say I'm in simple page here. Everything's working great here. Bob's been working on an error page, gone to lunch. Go hit Control F5 to launch it. Hey, I suddenly get compile errors in the project. Thanks, Bob. Today I'd be blocked from working on the project without either fixing it or excluding those files from the project. The nice thing here is you'll notice is instead when it says there's build errors, there's a second question. Do you want to continue anyway? Sure. And when I do that, we'll compile everything but the errors and let you run the site. And so you'll notice that Phoenix Me is still working. Everything's hunky-dory. If I try to access the error page, I'm going to get a problem. But this means I can optionally still continue, and as long as I don't access the pages that have errors on it, everything continues to work. So again, it makes it much easier if you're working with lots of updates or you're working on a team project. Keep things clean, simple, everything working. And just so we don't have to see that error every time we're just going to delete the error page. Okay, so anyway, a couple of cool features we showed off in terms of Visual Studio. Lots of cool stuff there. Let's actually go ahead and put this to use and build a richer site though. So, first thing I want to go ahead and do is do some data access and subject into my class project. And so specifically I'm adding this directory that has two subdirectories on it, one called DAL, one called BLL. And the idea behind the DAL is my data access layer, and so I have a class called AuthorsDB with a couple of methods that are encapsulating ADO.NET calls against the pub's database, specifically the authors table. So it's just, standard data methods returning data sets. What I've then done is build this business access layer. And what the business access layer class has, or the directory has, is two classes, one called author. And what author is doing is encapsulating an author. And so it's basically a standard class. It's not deriving or implementing any special interface. It doesn't have any special data binding attributes on it. It's just a vanilla class. Public constructor, public properties, getter and setters. The nice thing about this is rather than work with data sets now, I've kind of provided a nice strongly typed object model that's schema neutral that I can actually program against. I didn't have a publisher class. And what this publisher class is doing is it's calling into the data access layer and exposing three methods. Lookup authors by state, just taking a string parameter and grabbing from the database, generating a collection of type author, and returning it. This is using a new feature that's available in 2.0 called generics, both VB and C# supported. And what generics let me do is let me build collections, or really any object, and specify a strongly typed declaration as part of it. So rather than have to return an array list, which would be an array, a collection of objects, I can actually declare a list of type author. And what this means is I now get strong type IntelliSense against that collection. So for example, if I say authors, sub 0 dot, you'll notice I'm getting the properties of type author instead of having to cast it as an author. So I get better IntelliSense, I also get better error checking. Also I get slightly better performance in many cases because I don't have to do as much casting and I can be strongly typed internally. So what I'm just doing is iterating over the return data set, generating a strongly typed collection of authors, returning it. Then I have a method called lookup author details, takes an ID, returns a single author instance. Then I have a method called update author, which is taking in an author instance and updating into the database. So simple class, three methods. Beauty is I'm not exposing any database specific stuff, no data sets, no ADO.NET surfacing from this, so that I have a very clean abstraction that I'm exposing. It's just my business layer. What I want to be able to do, obviously, is build some web UI against it. So I popped up Visual Studio 2003 and said, hey, someone come up on stage, build master details against it, implement paging, filtering, sorting, and editing. Anyone think they can do it in 5 minutes or less? Maybe it's the business layer? Yeah, maybe 5 hours, but it'd be hard. Let's do that in 2.0 and see how we do that. So, we're going to build a page called data page. Just like we had a little simple page. Difference here is we're going to make this our author demo. We're going to bump up the font here, make it a heading. And what I want to go ahead and do is I want to provide an author listing that's binding against that middle tier layer. I'm going to use that lookup authors by state method. So I'm going to have some user input to prompt for what state we want to look up. I could obviously have a text box. In this case here, I'm just going to use a drop-down list. You'll notice we have some context-specific kind of what we call helper UI that pops up now on controls. Control developers can basically surface this to users and allow you to do common tasks. So in this case here, editing items is a fairly common task. We're going to have California, Utah, or no, not Utah. Where else? Yeah, Utah. And Arizona. And we'll just enable Postback by default on it. And then what I want to do is obviously have some data UI that binds against the middle tier layer based on what's selected in the drop-down list. And to do that, I'm going to go to my toolbox. And you notice we have like 60 new controls, and one challenge is how do you place them all on the page? So we invented this new thing we call hierarchical toolbox. So you can actually now see everything with categories, and you can choose expand, collapse, and then your will. Now I'm going to add a grid control onto the page. Here we also have common tasks. Common tasks I want to do here is obviously connect the data source. There's multiple different data sources we can connect to. We could do two-tier data binding, go directly against the database. That's not a good practice. We want to do three-tier data binding, so we want to bind against an object. We'll automatically show you what objects are in your business objects are in your project. I want to bind against the publisher, and specifically the method called lookup authors by state. I can either manually code in some code that's actually going to set the state proc value in that method. I can manually do it. We also then have an automatic kind of parameter binding mechanism. So for common scenarios here, where say I'm just pulling it from a control, I can just say, oh, bind to a control, specifically the drop-down list. Hit finish, and now I have data grid, data bound against the middle tier business object layer, and I'm good to go. Let's format it. Snowy pine, it's appropriate for this week's weather. It's really, you know, getting off a Seattle airplane was, you know, 45 degrees and cold, and walking in like 88 degree weather is, it was fun. You know, like, took off my glasses and, you know, like, demissed them. So anyway, hit run. Now we have data grid filtered based on this drop-down. No one in Arizona yet. Going against that middle tier layer. Hey, lots of things in Utah. Too many. Let's implement paging. Do that. We're going to go down here and click the enable paging option. Going to add paging to this data grid. And because actually I don't have enough, I'm going to change the page size from the default, which is 10, just be 5. Refresh here. And now, hey, I have paging on top of my middle tier layer. Few too many values showing up right now, so rather than have a single drop, a single grid, let's implement kind of master details where, you know, I show a couple summary of some of these things, and then we'll actually link to a details page that'll let me do more, drill into more details. What I'm going to do is, you notice I can select columns now. Yeah, no longer our modal dialog to do everything. And we're just going to remove a few columns. Oops. And I'm going to add one other column, which is going to be a hyperlink. And I'm just going to call this details. And what I want to go ahead and do is I want to go off to a page called details.asvx that we're going to build in just a second. And I'm going to pass in an ID parameter. And what I want to do is I want to bind it against the ID from that author object. So you notice we provide, tells us drop down on what the object model looks like of the bound author. Now I have a details link. Challenge, of course, is I don't have a details page, so let's build that now. So, call this author details. Now, I want to show a single record of a user here. So, there's a couple different ways I could do it. I could obviously manually just put all the controls I want on the page, and then page load, push them and set them pretty easily, and write some code to do that. We also then have a couple of new data controls that make the type of scenario a lot easier. And so, specifically, you can now data bind a single record. And have both a templated and a non-templated way you can bind controls declaratively to it. So, for example, I can add a details view onto the page, which is one of those controls, bind it against that same publisher object that we had before, This time, though, I'm going to bind against lookup author details and use the ID property to pull it. Again, I can write code to set it, or I can just bind it declaratively against the ID query string guy. Format it. Also make it snowy fine. Let's just resize this control a little bit. And now, when I click on, please, I got master details. You're behaving going to work tomorrow, aren't you? So anyway, now I have master details. If I wanted to, you can do templatize as well. So if we don't want to have kind of this default looking feel, we can also have a form view control. And I could go ahead and data bind against the same object data source that we had. This is automatically populating a default look and feel, but the nice thing is it is also templatized. So if I want to go ahead and specifically change, and I don't really care about the last name, I can customize it. I can also go ahead and on a per control basis pull up the data bindings, and you'll see here I can actually data bind against my container. And so I can actually do an expressive data binding without having to write eval code in order to data bind individual elements. So full flexibility in terms of doing single row editing. If I want to do updating, so I want to make this both readable and writable, I can just go back to my data source, and where I could previously just, previously set up the select method, I can also do an update method. Binding is update author, which is going to take back a single author object. So configure the data source to do that. Oh, wonderful. Should have done that form view thing. Hold on a second here. It's a beta. I bound the same control to that second control we did. So instead of just creating a new control, I bound the same one, and then I deleted that one. And so now it's looking for that one to update it. I'm complaining. So lookup authors by details. Oops, query string. ID. The last thing we gotta do then is also do the update method. And we're going to go ahead and format it. And what this is basically doing is now I have both a select and an update method that I can go ahead and I'm data bound against. And so if I want to enable editing support and updating support, I can just now go ahead and say enable editing. That control is going to know, my data source does support editing, so I can provide edit link UI. I'm just going to provide then a link back to the original data page. And now, if we just want to start moving people wholesale to move Ann here into Arizona, just change her Phoenix. Hit update. We just updated the business access. So we created the control, created an author object, passed it the business access layer, updated the data access layer, updated the database. And now when we go back to the data page, Ann's in Arizona. So pretty easy to do data access, pretty powerful. As you can see, using three-tier data binding, we're not doing kind of this two-tier demo that you're going to go, that's nice, but I'll never do that. And hopefully, the best practice patterns that you use in real-world apps. Can you use images instead of links? Yeah, there's an image bound field. So if you want to have, instead of details being a text, you want to make it a nice image, you can absolutely do that. Let's think about that. Let's do something like that. So, got a couple pages here. A couple things to look at. So, we had this snowy pine, snowy pine, or some silly nonsense that we called, that we set on our grid views. That auto format dialog provides a couple of nice built-in look and feels. One challenge, though, you run into with ASP.NET today is whenever you set style information on a control, what it's doing is it's going ahead and setting strongly typed properties on that control, which is good. The downside, though, is all the style information is embedded in my ASPX page. And more specifically, it's embedded on a single control in that ASPX page. So if I want to have the same look and feel for this grid on multiple ASPX pages, I have to copy and paste. And if I ever want to change the look and feel, so instead of being Snowy Pine, I'm going to be sunny Arizona, I end up having to update on every single page and every single place that I'm using that control. There's no way to centrally kind of customize it in a nice, clean way. So that's where this next feature comes into play. It's called themes. And the idea behind themes is you can do a couple things. One is I can go ahead and now remove formatting from controls. So I'm just going to use the remove formatting option here. So that instead of having both functional properties as well as style properties embedded in the same control, I now just have nothing. I just have the functional properties. So that's good in the sense of, hey, it's much cleaner from a developer perspective. It's bad in the sense that it now looks ugly. But what I want to do is be able to store that elsewhere in a nice central way and have the page look nice. And so what I can go ahead and do is add what we call themes directory into my site. And the way the themes directory works is you can have any number of subfolders underneath it that identify themes on your site. So here I actually have a Bob theme, which is ironic, and a Scott Goo theme. Themes can have CSS, so I just have standard CSS here for my Scott theme. They can also have what we call it skin files. And what a skin file does is it contains control definitions for style definitions for controls. So it can use CSS, but it also lets you set strongly typed properties and templates that CSS doesn't have a direct correspondence to. And so right here I have a couple of grid views defined. This one right here is going to provide my default view of what I want a grid view to look like when the Scott Goo theme is applied. This one right here is showing a specific one I'm calling skin 2, also just call this Phoenix, which is a named skin. So rather than get the default look and feel when I apply the Scott Goo theme, I can say, oh, I want to actually have this control pick up the Scott Goo skin of the Scott Goo, the Phoenix skin of the Scott Goo theme. Complicated. Anyway, but you can basically define all of your default look and feel for your controls in these skin files. And what it means then is, on a site, either in your config file or directly in your page directive here, and notice we can do a nice IntelliSense on what are installed. I can say, hey, I want to apply the Scott Goo theme. Now in design view, I'll pick up the style sheet information as well as the default look and feel for the control. And then at runtime, it looks nice as well. And again, the beauty is I didn't have to embed all that style information in my ASPX. I could store it centrally. I could have a designer own that. I could build all the functional layout for my UI on my site, and then we can tweak the exact look and feel later in a nice central separate place. I can do the same thing, obviously, then for details. We'll pull out the formatting here. I would also pick up the Scott Goo theme, and now we go ahead and click on someone, and you notice it's also picking up that same look and feel. You can dynamically set themes on the fly, so if I had both Scott Goo and Bob, I could actually write some code and say on a per request basis, based on who's logged in or where URL they're coming from, I can automatically vary the theme. Everything on the site will take effect for that particular user, and there's lots of cool things you could do. Another nice thing is, if you do have multiple skins, if you hit auto format now when you have a theme applied, then those, in addition to the default funny sounding ones that we create, Apple Orchard, Snowy Pine, still have to figure out who comes up with these names. You'll also notice that all the different skins in your skin files will now show up in auto format as well. So you can visually see, oh, here's the default one, here's what the Phoenix one looks like. And you can just go ahead and apply it. And again, the beauty is you're not setting a whole bunch of properties. Instead, you're just setting a skin ID. Everything else gets picked up. And what you're left with in your source is, you know, just the core markup as well as the behavior functionality of the site. So that's kind of getting consistent look and feel. As we start building multiple pages, though, we're also going to run into a situation where we want to have not just style information that's consistent, but also layout information. And that's something that CSS and style properties don't really affect. So if I want to have a common header, a common menu system, and a common footer on all my site, you know, how do I do that? Today, you end up using typically user controls or include files, or a lot of times you just basically duplicate things all over the place on each page. And says, hey, you know, we should really move the menu on the right-hand side. You go, that would be nice, but we're not going to do that. And so what we're trying to do in V2 is to provide a built-in way to kind of enable you to have that flexibility and force that kind of consistent look and feel. And the way we do that is by using a new feature we call Master Pages. Basically the way it works is you can add a new file on your site. I'm going to call it Master Page. I can call this site.master. Pick my language. I should pick BB. But anyway, pick my language. Next one. Now I have a page that looks pretty much just like a regular ASP.NET page. The only difference is it has a master directive instead of a page directive. But I can have any HTML, I can have any server controls I want within it. And what I'm going to go ahead and do with this master page, though, is because I want it to be the common template that all my pages on my site inherit, I'm just going to add a couple tables. You can also use layers, but I'm better with tables, so we'll use tables. And I'm just going to go ahead here and make the background color here blue. So I'm just going to have a common header I'm going to put at the top of my page. I'm going to add some images into my project. You know, so I can just drag and drop them. I don't have to add existing items anymore. And what I want to go ahead and do is just add a logo and a banner out at the top. Resize it. Now I have a common header. And I'm going to go ahead and add another table. 2 columns wide. That I'm going to use to basically have kind of on the left, a menu, which we'll fill in a little bit. And then what I want to go ahead and do is, use the right-hand cell to basically contain the unique content that I want each page on the site to fill in. And the way I'm going to go ahead and identify that is by adding a new control onto the page called the content placeholder control. This is a new control in V2, and basically what it does is it lets me identify a replaceable region within a master page. I can have any number of content placeholders I want within a page. All I need to do is give them a separate ID property, just like I would any other control. In this case here, I'm going to call this one main content. I can also put into optional default content if I wanted to, so I can just type in here and have, oh, this is some default random text. If I want to make sure that a page that's based in the master doesn't fill that region in, it'll show that up. You can also chain master pages. So you have one master fill in, derive from another master, derive from another master, and then have a page based in that submaster. So it gives you lots of flexibility in terms of customization. And now I have a simple, not terribly attractive, but we'll make it attractive later, site, a master template that I can apply across my site. And what I can then do as I build new pages on the site, so we'll build a default.spx, is as I'm creating them optionally based them on top of a master. So when I do that, we're going to show you all the masters in the project. I'm going to pick site.master, and now when I build this new page, you'll see that there's a master page file property that's been set that's pointing to that site master. So you'll notice, hey, this page doesn't have any HTML, doesn't have any body. The reason is because it's based on the master, the HTML form, body, all that stuff built on the master template. Instead, what I'm editing in this page is just the content unique to this particular URL page. And the way I do that is I have a content region that's pointing to the main content on that master template, and I can just fill in anything to do there. If I flip to design view, you'll notice that we'll actually merge the two together and show you a unified view of what the page is going to look like, where you take the master and the content and put all the content there. We'll say, hey, welcome to Phoenix. Looks fine. Go to source view. You'll see that, again, all the content that's been persisted is unique content to this page. The beauty is everything else is in the master template. So if we want to change the look and feel, update it in one place, don't need to go ahead and touch this page ever. Now I'm going to go ahead and run this. At runtime, ASP.NET merged the two together, and I get back consistent single HTML page down in the corner. So, going back to this author demo, if I want to have that pick it up as well, and have those pages use them, it's pretty easy to take advantage of it. So if you have existing pages, good news is, don't need to rewrite them. Flip that one in. You should make some changes to your manager. All you do is set a master page file. You'll notice we got IntelliSense there to show you everything in the project. I'm just going to go ahead and add an AST content tag. Oops, point at the, you notice again, IntelliSense from the main page, show me all the content placeholders I can fill in. Then I'm just going to go ahead down here, get rid of that. Go back to our details page, I'm going to do the exact same thing there. Again, nice IntelliSense. Save, and now we go to our data page. It's based on the master as well. And we go ahead and go to Arizona, click on Add, details is as well. Now, the other beauty is, you notice, oh, the menu, I didn't actually adjust this. A little bit of buzzing back there, I don't know if someone can help with that. And I didn't adjust the menu so that it was aligned to the top instead of its center line. You know, again, the beauty of master pages is instead of having to update multiple pages to have that take effect, I can just click on this particular page and go in and adjust this so that the V-align is on the top. Hit save, refresh here, now it jumps to the top. That's true, again, consistently throughout the site. So I'm going to have a nice consistent look and feel. Much easier to make site updates, much easier to kind of enforce consistent look and feel across the site. So we now have three pages on the site. They all have style information stored externally, and we also now have a master page template that we're using to enforce consistent layout across all of them. Let's go ahead and add navigation. So I want to have the ability that I can easily kind of provide a menu structure or tree view and let people find their way around the site. A couple different ways I can do it. Now I have a master page, I could just go ahead and build that menu on the master page, put some JavaScript or just add a table and hard code in some links. That's not ideal because if I ever want to change that link structure, I end up having to go ahead and dork with some HTML or JavaScript. So what I'd rather do is be able to have a nice XML file or store it in a database and much more cleanly separate it. It's kind of hard today. In V2, it's pretty easy. All you do is add a sitemap file to my site. Drops it in here. I have basically a simple sitemap XML file definition. I can go ahead and say, hey, I want to have a top-level default.spx, which we'll call home. I can define kind of what the relationship of all these links are. Underneath that, I want to have a go database.spx, and I want to call this author list. Can I have another one that I'm going to call details.spx? And call this author details. So, simple layout structure for what I want the site to look like. And now I can go ahead and programmatically, within code, use the sitemap API to see anytime someone visits the site, where are they in that overall hierarchy that we just defined. So in other words, what's the current node? Oh, if they're on the home page, it'll be default. If they're on a data page, it'll be the default. Or it'll be data page. I can see what the parent looks like, so I can see what the child nodes look like. I can see what the parent node looks like, so I can start to, if I wanted to write code, I can go ahead and manually construct my own menu structure or breadcrumb style UI, and I can basically see a lens of how someone's using my site and where they are. The beauty is if I ever update that XML file, the API just works. I don't need to go ahead and rewrite anything on my site. Now, this is if I want to write code. I can also, just avoid having to do that altogether and just use a built-in navigation set of, or the navigation controls, which can bind to the sitemap for me automatically and skip that whole process. So, for example, if I want to have a menu or, let's say, a tree view, I can go to the new navigation section of my toolbox. We'll just add a tree view. I want to bind it against sitemap. You'll notice the tree view is now automatically in design time showing me the definition of that sitemap we just created. We can go ahead and customize the look and feel. We can make it look like the XP File Explorer, Windows Help, MSDN, we all love, my Messenger. In this case here, I'm just going to make it simple. And now, I'm going to go ahead and run the site. You'll see, hey, I have a tree view show up that has the three links. And I can now navigate back and forth around it. One other kind of cool thing about this, you'll notice as I'm navigating, notice how the selection is changing in the tree view. So the tree view, is because it's bound to the site navigation system, it can tell where is the user in the current sitemap. And not only use that to display the list of links, but also highlight the current selected region that they're on. Other kind of cool navigation tricks we could use, we could use the breadcrumb control, or sitemap path control, so that as we're navigating around, we can actually show you kind of a Yahoo style, you know, drive in and out in terms of where you are in the hierarchy, let people jump up and down within that site. And again, it's just standard control using the sitemap API where you go. Because all this is provider driven, if you want to go ahead and plug in your own content management solution, so you want to store it in a database, or you want to do a slightly different XML file structure, easy to do so, just build a sitemap provider, register the config file, everything I just showed will drive off that automatically. So you get, again, all the productivity features, but also full extensibility. So we got navigation, consistent look and feel, we got data binding and middle tier objects. Let's add security. So building a performance-based authentication system today, 5 minute pass, right? It takes a while. First step in V2, just like it is today, is you want to go ahead and set your authentication mode equals forms. Exact same approach that you use today. One thing you will notice, though, is you do now get IntelliSense in your WebAct config files. Makes it a little bit easier there. Thanks. So that's step one. Use the exact same forms authentication model we had in V1.1. So again, we're not changing the model, we're just adding more features. Then what I'm going to go ahead and do is I want to build, obviously, a login page to let someone log in. But based on that same site template master, called login.aspx. What I want to do here is basically provide a mechanism where you can type username, type the password, add a button, double click on the button, and allow you to write some code that looks like this. Get rid of caps locks. If membership.validateUser, textbox1.text, textbox2.text. So this is going to go ahead and ask the membership system, hey, is this username password combination legal? If so, I can go ahead and say forms authentication.setAuthCookie. Text. That's all I need to do in order to provide a minimal logging system. Again, the way it's doing it is it's calling the membership API. Membership API looks up in the membership provider. Membership provider tells us whether or not it's legal or not. Built-in membership provider in the box is a SQL Express-based version, which we'll see in just a minute. But again, you can build your own provider, register the config file. This API now goes against your existing credential system. So pretty powerful. Now, I tend to be a fairly lazy person, I have to write those three lines of code. And then, in fairness, it's more lines of code if you want to do validation, check if you want them to remember your password, and there's other features you'd add. That adds up. So rather than have to do any of that, you could just go to the login tab and add the login control. So do all that for you. Make it a little elegant. What this has here is ASP colon login. It is a templatized control, so you can use the default look and feel. You can also switch it into a template mode and basically data bind your own elements within it. So you're not forced to have this look and feel. It can encapsulate all your functionality and let you customize it however you want. Hit save. Let's go back to our site master now. And I'm just going to go ahead here and change the background kind of color. That to be white. Change something to be white. And using CSS. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and change the style to be white. And last but not least, I want to go ahead and have a link to the login page here so that someone can log into the site. A couple different ways I can do it. I can obviously hard code in a login link, but more ideally, I want to have a login, log out kind of UI so that if I'm logged in, it's going to prompt me to log out. If I'm not logged in, it's going to prompt me to log in. The way I can do is obviously have a link button, just check if the user is currently authenticated or not and toggle it. Or I could use login status control to do that for me. There's a theme here. So now I'm going to go ahead and run this site. I'm not currently logged in, so you notice that the login control is specifying a login link. Yes, you can also make it an image. Go ahead, click the login. What do you want the username to be?
Bob.
Bob, okay. Enter a password, log in. This first time is going to be a little bit slow because it's provisioning the membership database for you automatically. It's the very first time the app's being used. So this is going to go ahead and create a database with all the appropriate schema for membership roles, personalization, and all the other features that we ship. And it's going to fail because there's no Bob in the system. It's a brand new system. Where the database has been provisioned, by default, it actually will provision it underneath an app underscore directory. Or app underscore data directory on your site. And basically there's then just an MDF file that's been stored under that. MDF is a SQL file format. And so you can copy this anywhere you want. And the nice thing is you can publish your web then to a hosting solution and all your data comes with you. You can also then just obviously go into the web.config file, point this to go anywhere. So typically for any high volume site, you'd want to upsize this into a SQL Server database. It's the same file format as SQL, so you can just within SQL Enterprise point it to the MDF, import it, you can then enable clustering and backup and all the other things that you probably want in the production system, tweak your config file to go to the new database and you're good to go. So the problem is, you know, we don't have a Bob in the system, so what we need to do is obviously build a registration page. And I want to provide the registration page UI to let someone log in. Just like I did before, add text boxes and manually use the membership API to do so. So I'm getting a 10-minute warning. I'm just going to use the create user control. That'll do it for me. Also make this elegant. Let's go back to the login page. And I'm going to go ahead and, on the login page, I'm going to go ahead and point, say, hey, register new user. And just point them at the registration page. Now we go to the login page here. I can go up to user. We're going to create Bob. We have this new beta 2. This is actually a lot of people. It's surprising how many people have two-letter passwords. And between beta 1 and beta 2 is a security best practice. We actually have a password complexity feature that we added. So you can actually set like the rules that you want. The password, so you say, oh, it has to be a certain length, and it has to have one of these characters, or it has to conform this regular expression, you can have configured it. And so we said it has to be six characters with one, or seven characters with one non-alphanumeric character. The number of people that said, but my password's only two letters long. It's the one I use everywhere. Oh, God. So you can turn that feature off. Strongly recommend you keep it on. And we can have, what is your favorite city? And hey, Phoenix. Do you implement a security question and answer? Hey, we just registered Bob on the system. And those we're now logged in, because the link now says log out. And we now have Bob in our membership system on our site. Just to prove that, we can go back to our homepage. Rather than say, hey, welcome to Phoenix, let's change it to be a little bit richer. I'm going to add a login view control in here. And I want to toggle it so that if you're new to the site, you're anonymous. It says welcome to Phoenix, but this is going to basically be a control where I can have different templates for logged in and anonymous views. So if you're logged in, I want to say, hey, welcome, username. You can obviously put a label, write code, or just use the logged in control. Now, welcome Bob. If I log out, it gives me the anonymous view. What this gets persisted in the source file as is just templatized container control. So I can do whatever I want within it, and I can obviously write code against it as well. Last quick thing while we're on security that I'll talk about is I'm going to add a enable role-based security. So we talked a little bit about roles earlier. Idea with roles is it lets me go ahead and create kind of high-level groups of capabilities and map people into it. What I'm going to go ahead and do is I just launched the new ASP.NET Web Admin tool. I'm going to go to the Security tab. Let's see, there's one user on the system, Bob, that we created. I'm going to go ahead and then also enable roles as part of this, and then create a new role that we're going to add. I'm just going to call friends, the Bob's friends, onto the site. I can then go ahead and manage who's in this role. So let's say I look up B users. Hey, there's Bob. Bob's now my friend. And so basically, I just created the role structure of friends. I mapped the user into it. And now I have a role I can use in my site. I get to programmatically now control access or check to see whether or not a user's in that role. Just for simplicity's sake, I could also go ahead here and inside this login view, just add a role group. I'm going to add a special UI here, so if you're a friend. Is it friends or friend? Do you remember what I did? Friends, okay. I'm going to say, hey, welcome, friend. And what this is going to go ahead and do now is when I visit the site anonymously, it's just going to go ahead and say, welcome to Phoenix. If I log in now as Bob. He's my friend, so he's going to see a special welcome friend UI. We have falling out, I can uncomment that. Go back to being the normal user. You can do this both for UI in terms of like using the login view control, you can do it programmatically. There's metadata attributes you can actually add to the members, the methods and on classes in your business layer. So if you want to force, hey, you can't ever even call the lookup author details method unless you're in this role. You can declaratively set it in both your business layer. You can set your config file to control access to the page. You can also set a property in our tree view control, which will filter what nodes are available based on the role you're in as well. But lots of flexibility. Security kind of permeates throughout the system. Last two things I'm going to show while we're here is I mentioned earlier, hey, the site isn't the most attractive one in the world in the sense of, hey, we built it entirely from scratch. Not a bad site, but you know, I'm not a designer, and this master page is functional, but it's not terribly pretty. The nice thing, though, is because we took all of our style information, stored it centrally, we took the central layout of our site and stored it in a master file, changing the look and feel of the site becomes much easier. I don't have to go ahead and touch thousands of pages in order to update a new look and feel. Instead, I can just basically copy over and replace things in one central way, have everything take effect. And so to do that, I could just go ahead, for example, and delete my site master. Go ahead here and add a new site master that a designer on my team's worked on. Refresh. Picks up the new look and feel. And now without having to touch any of the pages that we built, I'm using the exact same controls. I got the same, you know, tree view that I had before. We've got, you know, the login view still working. I can log out and log in just like I did before. But I have a much, we got sort of the breadcrumb. And basically the way the web part zones work is they're container controls that are going to provide kind of a modular look and feel or portal-like layout. And I'm just going to contain those user controls within them as templates. And what this means now is I go to design view. I now have a nice kind of modular look and feel. If I run this at runtime, I now have those user controls showing up in kind of that modular layout of the site. If I want to build a new user control, I can do that pretty easily. I'm just going to go ahead and say, hey, new Scott Koo. Hey, what are you doing to DB? inside this user control is data bind in the exact same middle tier layer that we had before. And so I'm going to add a grid, data bind it against that publisher object, go against the lookup authors by state, and we'll just pick California, hard coded in at the moment. We're going to get rid of a few of these columns. And format this. And then last but not least, I'm just going to shrink the font down and make it 100% Y, so it's just going to fill up whatever region is contained within. So now I have a reusable control. If I want to use it on this page, you'll notice that the user controls are, you now get WYSIWYG rendering inside the page instead of the nice gray box that says user control. You actually can now see what it looks like. And you can now drag and drop that user control on the page. I get the rendering of what we just saw. Let's save, hit refresh, and now we have that control showing up in the bottom right, filling within our portal. The downside is, though, it's always in that bottom right. And really what I want to do, because I have a security system built in, I want to be able to personalize the site so that if Bob is visiting the site, he can choose where he wants that control to be. And so rather than be down here, hey, it'd be great if we can make it up there. Doing that today would be pretty hard. Doing it with V2 is pretty easy, so this is the final thing we'll show. I'm going to go ahead and just go back to this master template. I'm going to provide some UI in the form of a link button, standard link button we have in AMD 1.1. I'm going to call customize. We make this white. It scans out, you can see it. And I'm going to go ahead and write the Van Halen so that when it gets clicked, I'm going to write some code. And what I'm going to go ahead and do is I'm going to interact with what's called Web Part Manager, which is one of the controls I added when I added the table. And I'm going to go ahead and set a property on it, which is changes the display mode. And specifically, I'm going to go ahead and set the display mode into what we call a catalog mode. And what that does is it will hit refresh here. It'll let the hit save on the other file too. What it's going to go ahead and do is it will allow me to change the web part manager into kind of a customization mode. So you can, so I'm logged in as Bob, and hit customize. And what this is going to do is it's going to have the catalog control show up. So remember that was the third control that we added as part of the table. And it's also giving me some extra fun capabilities, like, for example, the ability to now delete controls from the page. And those, when I delete them, they show up in the catalog. So, for example, as I'm doing that, if I want to add it back, pretty easy to do that. And the other nice thing is I can drag and drop. So now, if I'm logged in, I can go ahead and precisely control what I want the layout to look like. As me, being Bob, hit close, and it'll save the layout for that page for this user in the personalization system that's built into ASP.NET 2.0, and now I have a tailored experience. So I can delete whatever I want. Controls can optionally expose properties that they want to allow an end user to tweak as well. They can save those as well. And now whenever Bob visits the site, whether it's from this machine or any other machine he accesses, we'll see it. Hit log out. You'll notice it goes back to the default look and feel. The developer specified. Log in again as Bob. Hit the exact same settings. And roam from machine to machine. So, kind of fun stuff. So, yeah. Stefan's going to do a lot more in very few minutes. A couple of last things just to point out. This will run on your existing systems. Anything that runs ASP.NET today will run ASP.NET 2.0, so it does not require OS or a web server upgrade. It will run Windows 2000, XP 2003. Beta 2 is now available. It's the final beta we have for the product. You can download the Visual Web Developer tool for free, even if you're not an MSDN subscriber. If you are an MSDN subscriber, you can also download the full Visual Studio Theme System beta off the website. There is also then a go-live license that you can optionally take advantage of. So if you want to start building today and you're willing to go live on a production application on the beta, which, you know, sometimes you might be willing to, sometimes you might not, there is now a license that lets you do that. And so we're actually in the process of upgrading Microsoft.com.
At the end of the day.
And all my slides and all my demos, I'll post once either tonight or tomorrow back to Redmond on my website. You can go to www.spagri.com. Thanks so much.